RTE is celebrating Irish television's 50th birthday this year, but celebrations have been somewhat muted by the growing deficit, which, according to Pat Rabbit, will reach €50 million by the end of this year. And that's clearly hitting what makes it to our TV screens. And the minister has also flagged his intention to replace the TV licence fee with a broadcasting charge on households. And that's once again opened up a debate on the purpose and the use of the TV licence fee, which funds 50% of RTE's operations. The rest comes from commercial revenue. I'm joined now by Glenn Killane, Managing Director of RTE Television. Now, I know your background is in sport, first of all, and you're celebrating some good news on that front this week.
We've managed to secure the next 3 years of the Champions League on Wednesday nights. It's good news for RTE because it's in line with our cost reduction mechanisms in sport. Over the next number of years, we aim to reduce sports rights costs by 25%, and this is a significant reduction. Can't say how much because that's commercially sensitive, but Ryan Nugent and the team in sport have delivered, and I think it's a good thing for Irish sports fans. TV3 also secured Tuesday nights and Setanta. So it's good news for Irish broadcasting overall, and we welcome the news that the other Irish broadcasters have secured the rights also.
Glenn, we watch, I think, 3 hours and 37 minutes of television every day, every adult in Ireland. Those are the statistics. What are we watching?
Well, from an RTE perspective, some of the staple shows are still incredibly popular. The Late Late Show, Saturday Night Show, chat shows are working very well. The Late Late Show is delivering regularly mid 40% shares, which is extraordinary for a show of the length and a show that has lasted as long as it has. Formats are incredibly important as well. I suppose it's about having those anchor points in your schedules. We went with The Voice. We've also gone with MasterChef, and we put that on RTE2, which was a new departure for us. There is a slight shift on RTE2. We're trying to, while retaining young audiences, try and bring it more mainstream, offer an alternative to RTE1 when we're showing current affairs and news, offer a lighter alternative on 2 for an audience that may traditionally watch RT1 and would not have looked at RT2 as a place to go when they're not interested in watching news and current affairs. So MasterChef and The Craig Doyle Show and shows like that are aimed at trying to attract those audiences in. But formats, a lot of people are not mad about them, but what we're doing is we're putting them in an Irish context. I suppose, to use my old hat in sport, we often broadcast World Cups with no discernible Irish angle on them, yet we do 3 or 4 times the audience share of BBC for a match, for example, between Egypt and Cameroon or something. Why is that? It's because we're putting it in an Irish context. You know, the Irish analysts are there, Irish commentators, you know, a particular editorial positioning. And I think we're doing that with the likes of The Voice and MasterChef and Dragon's Den. They're well-known formats from abroad. You have an instant marketing advantage in that people understand what the show is. You know, we're happy with these formats because they're being made in Ireland. They're being made by companies like Shine Uile and companies like Tyrone, who put incredibly high production values on them. It's providing employment in the sector. And Irish audiences really like watching Irish people in these scenarios. So it's more meaningful and it has more resonance for our audience. So those formats are very, very popular. Factual is very, very popular for us, factual documentaries. I think we've had some big successes with documentaries recently, things like Departure Day and Arrivals. They were programmes that kind of really resonated with the audience. We had huge younger demographics watching factual programmes at 9:35, which was interesting because that's a subject. Emigration is a subject that resonates with most families across the country. So those kind of factual documentaries are working well. What's interesting is that news and current affairs has dipped somewhat. I think there is a certain ennui with news and current affairs at the moment, and there are peaks and troughs. It will wax and wane. We've seen that some of the smaller digital comedy channels are doing better because people are just looking to get away from the day-to-day drudgery and the bad news. And I suppose we have a responsibility for a bit of escapism as well, but we can't turn our back on the realities of the situation. So news and current affairs is still incredibly popular for us, but the audiences have waned. And that has impacted because of the volume of news and current affairs we broadcast. That has impacted somewhat on our share. I think it will come back. I think we're just the next news story away from it picking up again. I think it's a slow news period.
So that 50 million that Pat Rabbit is talking about, and I know a lot of that will be accounted for by redundancies, but it's bound to impact programme making. Where do you think the effect will be felt?
Well, it's already impacted. We've curtailed our daytime output. We came off air in March. We would normally run to the summer. That was a big statement for us to have to make, and an unfortunate one. We are very focused on minimising any cuts, minimising the impact of any cuts on viewers. But because of the scale of the problem we're facing, it's become impossible to avoid. So we've tried to protect post-watershed slots insofar as we can. Some of our lifestyle series have been cut quite severely. you know, the volume of lifestyle programming that we would have done in the past is no longer there. We're still doing lifestyle, things like Room to Improve, incredibly popular, Off the Rails, still very popular, albeit a shorter run this year again. So we've tried to kind of keep shows going, maybe with shorter runs, reduce the number of episodes, reduce the cost per hour in terms of the on-air activity. So some of the stronger brands that we have on air are still there, albeit possibly a shorter run. We've cut the number of one-off dramas we do. So we produce Love Hate, which was incredibly popular, picked up a wheelbarrow load of awards at the IFTAs. Very, very strong drama. Raw, also very, very strong. But the one-off dramas that we would have produced are no longer there because we just had to make cuts.
And those afternoon shows, are they coming back in the autumn schedules?
We hope that we can bring it back. Again, we're looking at trying to open up daytime as a more commercial part of the schedule where we can commercially fund more programming. But as it stands, we need help to fund it from the commercial sector. So we're working on that at the moment. We think we have a plan to get it back, but not ready to announce anything just yet. We've a bit of work to do just yet.
Because I know TV3 are able to run a whole schedule of live programming from early morning on buttons, apparently.
TV is rarely on buttons, but yeah, I think we're also looking at our operations model and we are looking at more cost-effective studio operations. That's a process that we're in at the moment and we should have some headway on that made by the autumn. But daytime is a focus for us. I think it's an area that we can't afford not to be in. It's an important commercial area for us as well as there are significant audiences watching at that time and we need to be there. So we recognise that, but I suppose it's just one of those things where we're absolutely in a bind here and something had to give and daytime was one of those that we had to curtail.
Revenues have fallen by 40% since the beginning of the recession. And we talked about this on the show before though, the shift online. How is that affecting your revenues?
I don't believe it's affecting revenues hugely. I think we're well positioned in RTE in terms of our online outlook and our positioning overall. We've invested over time in RTE.ie and in the RTE player. The biggest influence on our advertising and the big thing that we need to be worried about in this territory are the reams of channels from the UK that are now selling opt-out advertising in this territory. And I think that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room that nobody seems to be identifying. We're far too focused on having a go at one another, when really there's this kind of stealth attack on the broadcasting industry and we're not really seeing that this is the biggest threat that's facing us, certainly in the short and medium term. Online is something that we've embraced in RTE and I think we can embrace and we can work with it. I don't think there's any point in working against it. And I think the RTE player, the success of the RTE player shows what can be achieved. I don't see it affecting revenues in the short term. I think obviously the likes of Google are a huge operation and something that we need to watch. But I think we're essentially a content provider. And if our content is strong, we need to be able to stand our own 2 feet and believe in our content and say that we can stand toe-to-toe with anybody and work with anybody and partner with people, partner with the likes of Google, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. So there are huge opportunities presented by this new kind of world order, if you like. But we need to watch these channels that are coming in, selling opt-out advertising and not producing 1 minute's worth of Irish content. And that's a worry for both the Irish broadcast sector, the independent production sector, and I think it's something we need to be focused on.
One of the areas of public concern is the size of the salaries that you're paying to your top presenters. I talked about benchmarking with TV3. I know that the presenters in TV3 are paid a great deal less than your stars. I mean, obviously, the personnel costs are a huge element of your deficit. What are you doing to address that?
Well, in terms of top talent, the Director General, Noel Curran, has been out and very straightforwardly said there will be in excess of 30% cut to all top talent. And we're working through that as contracts fall due. Contracts have been renegotiated on that basis and it's been very effective to date. It's not something that's particularly pleasant, but it's something that you have to do. We recognise that it was a problem. In terms of our personnel-related costs, our headcount is now down at 2003 levels, which is the lowest level RTE's had in many, many years. We've had one voluntary redundancy programme. There will be another voluntary redundancy and early retirement programme. It's been announced. We're working through that again. It's going to be quite painful. It's going to require a lot of reorganisation, restructuring. So we're in this kind of fluid period, but we very much see that there is a very hopeful future. We have to bring our cost base down because the advertising isn't there. So, you know, 50% of our funding comes from advertising. So when that disappears, we've got a massive hole to fill. So it isn't showing any signs of coming back anytime soon, although it may be stabilising somewhat. But it is at a low base, so we have to adjust our cost base to reflect that. A lot of people have left the organisation and more will leave over the next coming months. So we are looking at our personnel-related costs. We were the first semi-state organisation to take a pay cut. Our staff took a pay cut voluntarily. That was something that was done very, very early. I mean, we kind of forget that this is ongoing since 08, the process of cutting. So we've been at this a while, and the goalposts do keep shifting in terms of the commercial revenue. So if we can get some stability and some vision of the future, we know where we're going. We have a very clear vision of where we want to be. We're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Still, just from a listener's, from a viewer's point of view, how did RTE end up in a situation where it is facing a deficit of that size? You have the lion's share of advertising, you have the licence fee. I mean, was there a profligacy with public funds over the boom times?
I've worked in the UK, I worked for ITV, and I've seen how commercial operations work. I think RTE is an incredibly efficient broadcaster. You would say that I would say that, but what we faced was an almost incomprehensible decline in advertising. It was a huge, huge shock to the system. We've lost 60 million a year in advertising since 2008. That's a huge amount of money for an organisation such as RTE to lose, you know, in one fell swoop. There was also a reduction in the TV licence fee in the last budget of the last government. The licence fee was top sliced to fund TG Cahir. There was a cap put on some of the social welfare funding for the licence fee. So these are enormous challenges for us to face in such a short period of time. And to say that we were profligate is kind of missing the point. We've had to adjust. There's a new wave of new reality in the country overall, and RTE is no different. We're facing up to those challenges just like every other business is.
And yet, you know, there's never been a public sector broadcaster. There's never been a question of benchmarking salaries against the commercial sector. You have the third highest staffed population ratio of any public broadcaster in Europe. And instances like the Father Reynolds case would suggest to me, as a journalist coming from a newspaper background, that nobody said, how much is this going to cost us? That there wasn't an eye on the bottom line, that you had the luxury of public funding and you didn't really have to look at costs.
I took over as head of sport in 2004, took over as managing director of television in 2010. We've always been very, very cost conscious. Over time, over the last number of years, because we've had to reduce the cost per hour of our programming, we've reacted, but it's a moving target. Advertising revenue has not stabilised, and we're incredibly dependent on advertising revenue.
Now, TV3 is a more popular station than RTE2. We've spoken to David McReadmott, and his view is that the entire of the licence fee should go to funding RTE1, and that basically RTE2 should be left sink or swim in the commercial arena.
RTE2 is a mixed genre channel. It provides a huge range of public service programming: children's, sport, comedy, drama. These are genres that TV3 don't attempt to cover. They do some sport, but they don't cover the broad range of sport that we cover. We cover everything from Gaelic games to rugby, to soccer, to minority sports. We'll be doing the Olympic Games this summer, the European Soccer Championships. These are not money spinners for RTE. These require licence fee funding also. This is public service we're providing here. There seems to be some sort of myth that these are big money spinners. The amount of resource that we have to put into an Olympic Games is incredibly onerous. And without a licence fee funding, we would not be able to do that. We'd not be able to produce an Olympic Games, the scale of an Olympic Games. You know, we will have 40 people across the entire organisation in London. Compare that to NBC, the US. They'll have over 2,000 staff in London, and they'll probably do less coverage of the Olympic Games than RTE will. That's across radio, television, online and news, in Irish and in English. So that's showing we're incredibly inventive, we're efficient, but also we do require licence fee funding for those types of activities. And to take advertising off RTE1 and add RTE2 standards onto it is short-sighted. I mean, the immediate effect of taking advertising off RTE1 would be a huge increase in the cost of advertising, because the commercial impacts delivered by TV3 would not be enough to deliver into the market. And the net result would be that advertising in Ireland would be more expensive than advertising in the UK. So a country with 1.5 million households would be more expensive to advertise in than a country with over 20 million households. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. There's also an assumption that that money would go to TV3. I've alluded to the £800 gorilla in the room, which are this over 20 channels which are now selling opt-out advertising in Ireland. That money would flow to the UK, would flow out of this country, which desperately needs it at the moment to invest in production. And the net beneficiary would be probably Rupert Murdoch and the likes, and not the indigenous sector here. And I think that's an incredibly short-sighted move. And I think it needs to be tackled, and it needs to be argued, and it needs to be debated. And David's entitled to his opinion, but we have a very different opinion to him.
But you do have to address a competition authority finding that found you were effectively abusing a dominant position with regard to advertising, the share deal whereby advertisers are offered a reduction given that they devote a certain portion of their advertising budget to RTE. That's going to have to change.
That has been changed and that is changed.
How will that affect revenues? Because his view is that advertising has been basically artificially depressed because of that sort of deal and that it will find its own level. Yes, it'll increase, the cost will increase, but that it will be more evenly spread.
It'll be more evenly spread in the UK rather than in Ireland, to be honest with you, Brenda. We met with the Competition Authority. We have talked to them. We've had experts come in and look at our advertising mechanisms. And we've come up with this new volume-based deal, which has been looked up and down by external experts, which has been benchmarked against other European broadcasters. And we haven't launched it yet. Yet they're already crying wolf. And that, to me, is a little bit previous. Willie O'Reilly has said that this is mark one. We're prepared to tweak as we go along. Nothing will be perfect at first. But we've reacted to the findings of the Competition Authority and we've worked with them. And I think we've come up with a system that we can very much stand over and I think will benefit everybody and isn't going to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
And what do you see as the impact of the sort of competitive environment that you're in now then, given the proliferation of channels that you have to compete with? I mean, one of the criticisms of the entire Reynolds case and the coverage of that particular story was the suggestion that it was a ratings-driven imperative.
We are operating in an incredibly competitive market. I think it's arguably the most competitive television market in Europe because we not only have domestic competition, but we have some of the best funded channels in the world competing for audiences here. So when we, at the end of last year, announced that 47 of the top 50 shows in this territory were produced by RTE, that's up against BBC, Sky, TV3. It's not just up against TV3 and TG Car. We're competing with them on a day-to-day basis. I'm incredibly proud of the output that both the independent sector and staff in RTE are producing on a week-to-week basis, notwithstanding the huge financial challenges we face. You know, 2011 was an incredibly challenging year as well, and yet we managed to produce 47 of the top 50 shows. That's a huge statement of intent from RTE that we're very focused on the audience. Now, you can say that we're too ratings-focused. Our commercial activities have been very much kept separate to activities in current affairs and news. As a managing director of television, I don't have responsibility for current affairs and news. And that's a very deliberate attempt by RTE to keep news and current affairs away from the commercial realities that we face in the broader television sphere on a day-to-day basis. So they are very separate to that. We're one of the few broadcasters who put news and current affairs in prime time, post-watershed slots, 9:35. You can see BBC, the Panorama show, has gone pre-watershed. And you can see that across Europe with other broadcasters. They don't play news and current affairs in primetime slots. There is a huge interest in news and current affairs in this territory. That has been a criticism in terms of us chasing ratings. I don't believe that that was at the core of the problem. I think this was a hugely regrettable incident for which RTE has apologised and paid a very, very heavy price, and individuals have paid a heavy price for it as well. Outside of news and current affairs, we are very competitive and we don't make any apologies for it. We have to be. We have to be competitive. We have to compete with these huge, huge channels who have vast resources, such as BBC and Sky. Context is really important here. When I say 47 of the top 50 shows over the last year were produced by RTE, RTE's entire budget for the entire organisation is less than the BBC spend on drama in a year. That's for 10 radio channels, 5 TV channels and an online service. I think people lose context when they start comparing RTE with the BBC. We are a minnow in a marketplace that has huge behemoths such as the BBC and ITV and Sky and other players there, US channels coming in as well. So people need to keep a bit of perspective on things. I think we're doing an incredibly good job with very limited resources at an incredibly challenging time in our history. And I aim to improve on that, and our staff are committed to improving on that, and the independent sector are committed to improving on that. But it's important to keep perspective on things as well.
And when you talk about competition, and you are competing, among others, with TV3, obviously, and programming like Telefornia, is there essentially, when you are chasing ratings, as you have to, a race to the bottom? Is that inevitable? I mean, I'm bearing in mind Mike Murphy's criticisms last week of the scheduling of the programme that he made, the Masterpieces programme. I know it was put on after a current affairs programme, but outside of your current affairs area, is there a possibility, is there a likelihood of dumbing down to chase those ratings by shifting programmes like that, you know, worthy art programmes, to a graveyard slot.
Well, I actually see 10:15 on a Thursday night as a really, really good slot. We play very high-end documentaries in that slot. A slight misinterpretation.
Mike is 70, though. I think he felt that a lot of his contemporaries might be in bed.
That's to be argued. Listen, Mike's entitled to his opinion, and he's a person who has huge interest in the arts and huge passion for it, and I can understand why. That programme in itself is symptomatic of what RT is about. What we've done is we've started a conversation about visual arts in Ireland, and that conversation wasn't happening. And I think that's part of what RT is about. We've created that conversation, that debate. You know, we've got all sorts of people like Robert Ballard coming out and giving out about the list. And I think that's great that people feel so passionate about it and that RT can allow that conversation to happen and give the space and time for it to happen. In terms of the race to the bottom, though, it's always a temptation. I think what we'd like to do in RT is resist that temptation. We have space in our schedules for risky programming, for programming that mightn't be to everyone's liking. But what we feel is we want to try and, through a variety of programming, appeal to people some of the time, a lot of the time, if you like. So we have space in our schedules for things like The Savage Eye. We have space in our schedules for the Republic of Telly, programmes that might appeal to younger audiences. But we also have space in our schedules for the programme that Mike Murphy referred to. You probably couldn't get two more different types of audiences. So what we're about is variety, is about a broad spread, trying to tap into different age groups every now and again, and utilise our digital kind of activities to try and encourage people to watch more of what we do, be it catch-up services such as The Player, and maybe point them back towards linear services such as on RT2 or RT1, and even radio, and point them to radio as well. So we're trying to have more of a synergy between our services on our different platforms to try and say, look, you know, if you like that, maybe there's something for you on Radio 1. Maybe like, if you like Savage Eye, maybe you like Green Tea on Radio 1. And these are the kind of things that we're trying to do, and we're trying to, you know, rather than live in these silos, because the public don't see us as a silo, see us as RTE. And it's about kind of saying, right, we have a lot to offer the general public and this is your service. We want to use new technologies to guide people around the range of services that we offer.
I know Player is a big success.
It has been a huge success. I suppose the big challenge for us with the Player is to try and capture how many people are watching a show. Let's use the example of Savage Eye. That's one of those shows that has performed incredibly well on the Player because younger audiences tend to be watching catch-up services more than, say, slightly older demographics. That is one of the top-rated shows on the Player that's done well, as is Desperate Housewives and things like that. But for us, the challenge is to be able to join up the measurement. So when we quote a figure of, say, it did a 12% share on RT2, we're not factoring in how many people are watching it on the Player. And we're not factoring in how many people may have watched a clip on YouTube. We are factoring in currently how many people would have watched it on a PVR. So the challenge for us in this commercial environment that we exist is to be able to measure it accurately and be able to kind of measure like for like, because the evidence we have is that people don't watch online for as long as they will watch on TV. TV is a much more passive experience. Online is a much more active, you have to kind of log on and click in. And the average is about 17 minutes on the Player in terms of what people will watch, whereas people will watch for a lot longer on TV. So it's kind of, how do you measure the two and how do you quantify the impact of that in the advertising space, you know, as well?
I have used the RT Plus One service a few times, which is great if you want to watch the news if something else is being watched at the same time. I just wonder, though, whether that might damage the sort of the institution, the appointment to be there at 9 o'clock to watch the news. Because once or twice I found I've gone to bed without remembering to catch up. Are you in any danger of moving it out of people's sort of out of sight, out of mind?
We've only started measuring Plus One with Nielsen in the last couple of weeks, so we're keeping an eye on it. Channel 4 have done it for a number of years. ITV have diversified with a number of other channels. I think channel diversification and exploiting the opportunities that the digital age presents is something that we have to embrace, I think. I think it's one way of shoring up some share decline that is inevitable with digital switchover. In every market that digital switchover has happened, there has been share decline. And I think all the Irish channels will be launching new services in the coming years. And I think that's one way of kind of picking up more audiences. I think, suppose, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, launch more channels, digitize more of your archive, get it out there and launch services and provide more niche services, perhaps, that you wouldn't be able to do on your main channels 1 and 2, for example, with regard to RTE.
In terms of advertising, obviously, you've got to explore all sorts of novel ways of getting the revenue in these days. The Fair City experiment with product placement is quite intriguing. Tell me how that works. I've seen the Spar shop.
It was a first for Irish television. It's one where Spar have invested in placing a shop. They put in the infrastructure for the shop and they stock the shop. It's a great association for RTE. It works for us in that it's not too in your face. It's a very good association for Spar and a good association for RTE. It works in terms of the script because it's now part of it. I mean, with something like Fair City, you have to plan 12 months in advance for something like that. This has been a long time in the offing and it's something we welcome. And I think it's a kind of a signal of potential in the future as well. I think we have to go there. We are obliged to try and commercialise and bring in as much revenue as we can in order to fund programming. It doesn't go into my back pocket or anybody's back pocket or shareholders' back pockets. Our shareholders are the public. So our commercial ventures are aimed at trying to drive more programming and pump more money into the independent sector as well as into in-house production within RTE.
I presume, though, that's something that you've got to have to monitor very carefully. And you don't want people in the script talking about the great value there is in Spar.
Yeah, I think there's a line you don't cross.
There won't be characters sponsored by companies. You won't see Airtricity, Belladoyle.
No, hopefully not.
Caitlin Killane, thanks very much.